Welcome to the Tusk Practice Sales Podcast, the premier podcast featuring the industry's most influential thought leaders, providing the latest insights and trends for healthcare practice owners across the globe.
Hey, this is Kevin Cumbus, present founder of Tusk. You know, we've all got CPAs, or at least those of you who file taxes hopefully have CPAs. I've had a lot of CPAs over the years in the businesses that I've built. Some have, frankly, felt like bean counters or service providers. They perform a task that's required by the federal government. Others actually provide the insight, and they serve as part of my decision-making body, and I lean on them as a member of my team. It's rare to find people like that, but Mike White, our guest today, is one of those people. Mike is principal at CLA. CLA is the eighth largest CPA firm in the U.S. with a major focus on healthcare. To give you a sense of what major focus means, they have worked with over 10,000 practices nationwide. They really like to work in healthcare services, though. And that includes everything you can imagine: women's health, senior living, med spa, dermatology, plastic surgery, dental, veterinary, I mean, the list goes on and on. These guys are in it not just from the beginning, not just helping you understand your business from an income statement, balance sheet, or cash flow perspective, but they also really shine when it comes time to sell your business. For those of you who may not be aware, when you decide it is time for you to monetize your life's work and go through a process, for example, we would take through a process, you're going to sign a letter of intent with some buyer, and then they're going to perform diligence on you. The financial portion of that diligence is called quality of earnings. This is kind of like a proctology exam, frankly, just of your on your financial statements. But these guys over at CLA, and we work with them all the time, they're the ones who make this less painful and actually can create value through the process. It is a deep dive into your numbers, and these guys do 200 quality of earnings each year exclusively in healthcare. I don't know of anyone who has the breadth and depth of experience from the CPA seat as mine. So, Mike, I am so happy to have you here, man. This is awesome.
Yeah, well, thank you. Welcome. Excited to have this conversation. I'm excited to expand a little education insight.
I am too, man. So, Mike, I've known you for close to 10 years, and it's been really interesting to learn a lot from you and to hear your experience. Tell everybody how long you've been in this seat, how long you've been in this world, and a bit about how you got to where you are.
Yeah, no, I love this. And you and I have grown up together in the seats, which is fun to watch and help each other. And I can, you know, picture so many of our conversations just sitting in our brain trust. But my story to you, you know, one like many entrepreneurs that are going to be listening today, I started a CPA firm when I was 24 years old. I had a passion for helping small business owners. I had a belief that CPAs could be more than just tax preparers, as you've led into this conversation. And I believe, just as every entrepreneur and myself, you needed help 365 days a year. And that's what we built a premise off of. We started serving healthcare specifically in about 2009, 2010. We continue to grow our path with serving outsourced accounting, tax, advisory, a little bit of everything, but we knew we had some transaction support, QEs, technology that we needed to grow into. So we merged in 2018 with CLA, and it's been an amazing move, and we've added so much to the team and breadth of knowledge that we can now bring. So it's been an exciting journey.
That's great, man. So let's start here. I know everybody's got to file their tax return. What does a relationship look like between an accountant and an entrepreneur? What should it look like in your eyes?
You know, I think we should be part of the advisory team. You know, one of the things you and I talk about so frequently, and some of your other, you know, folks that have been on these podcasts with you, it's a team. And so many of us work together so well because we're having insights from legal, we're having insights from the executive search, we're talking to the lenders. I think, you know, the CPA should be at the table with everybody else. I believe, you know, leaning in on that side, and all CPAs don't like to be in the room. They want to be behind a computer screen. They want to do that tax prep. And that's where we've blended the finance function, accounting function with that great technical CPA knowledge we need and lean in as much as we can across the board. You know, as you start thinking about the complexities of running these businesses, I always say you got to start with the foundation. Something as simple and monotonous as bookkeeping, as you know, drives millions of dollars of valuation. And if it's not done right, even if it may cost a little bit more along the way, that becomes such a huge problem. We get to quality of earnings, deal flow, and transactions. So.
Yeah, I'll just share a quick anecdote. We've got an analytics team here that I think is best in class, right? And when we sign on a client, we're quick to ask them, who's your CPA firm? And sometimes they groan when they hear who it is. And sometimes they go, oh, okay, this is great. Because we come from a position of trust but verify when it comes to the bookkeeping. So we actually pull all the general ledger reports. Look, there are humans involved, mistakes happen. But like you, we recognize the value of making sure that every I is dotted and T is crossed. If for you, from a reporting perspective, and then from a kind of retroactive valuation perspective, because value is based off your trailing 12-month EBITDA, right? So we got to make sure we get that number right.
And when you think about the life cycle, that process, that trailing 12 months, it's not just up to the point like, hey, it's January 26th or whatever day it is. We want to go on December. Well, the process could run a few months. So that trailing 12 still has to hold its own.
Oh, yeah.
And the challenges we see, and I look at 30 new practices a month, 30 new businesses a month, financial statements. Many times, I got one yesterday. It was July was the most recent month they saw. We're talking 5-6 months in arrears. How do you run a business that way? And when this was multiple locations, large organization, and I see it time and time again, and I know you do too.
They do
too. You're like, all right, here's our due diligence list. Let's go. I'll get back to you when my CPA has it done. And that's where that challenge is. And that's where, again, you get back to the fundamentals of putting a good process in place from that moment beyond the numbers, the buyer, partner, that individual that's looking to work with you is wanting to see how sophisticated you are running your operations. So all of those things are being met, which is incredible to be a part of.
One thing we talk a lot about on this pod is valuation. What's it a function of, right? And consistent cash flow that has less risk than the same amount of cash flow that has more risk. And what they're doing is they're forming an opinion about the riskiness of your business through the diligence process, through every single conversation they have with you, your CPA, your leadership team, your injector, your office manager, you name it. And one of the biggest hurdles we can run into with clients, amazing entrepreneurs, built incredible businesses. But the question we get, if you go through a process, you will get this question, hey, can you send us the most recent set of financials? And we go, no problem. And we go to our client and say, hey, it's January 26th. Can you send us your year end?
Yeah.
And they go, we have it done through September.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's not good. And what it shows, what the buyer sees is a lack of sophistication and an owner that's not even looking at their numbers to run their business, right? So we want to see our clients and every entrepreneur out there get financials in a reasonable period of time so they can then react to it and plan accordingly. But in the long run, you need them to continue to instill confidence in any buyer that you know what you're doing and you're staying on top of your numbers.
You know, and that's why these conversations are so important, is educating the industry, educating and bringing forth. This isn't a dental thing, a physician thing, a med spa thing. This is across all verticals. No matter what business you're in, you run a business, I run businesses, you have to have this level of sophistication. And when, you know, you asked earlier in the conversation, what has made us unique? It's not only bridging the traditional financials, the P&L, the balance sheet, making sure they're timely, making sure they follow the trend line and make sure they're standardized part of accounts, but it's also then correlating that back to the practice management data, understanding the industry well enough to say that doesn't look right. Or if we're going through a process, that's going to be asked about. And that's where, when we look at, on average, and this has been since you and I have known each other, I know we've talked this stat, 30% of our new clients a year are people who are like, oh my gosh, I'm ready to sell, but I tried to run a process, or, you know, Tusk looked at this and said, this is a complete mess. Like, you know, start with Mike and get going and come back to us in a few months. And that is still consistently that deal, which is why I love these conversations as we continue to empower the industry with this knowledge. Spend a little time now, it pays dividends in the future.
Yeah, I read, I don't know if you've read Rich Dad Poor Dad, have you read that book?
Yeah.
That's yeah, so it's a great classic book, right? Yeah. And in that book, one of the things I'll never forget is as you're building a business and as you're growing as an individual or as a family, get the best accountant and the best attorney you possibly can. It will pay you back in spades and dividends. Oh. And when I have conversations with you or Brian Galeo over at Dykema, and even in my own professional life, I've seen it happen. I believe it to be true.
Yeah. How many deals have fallen apart because of they couldn't pull the records, or they were able to get their act together one time to pull all of it, and then every month they were asking for more and more, and the buyer just got less and less comfortable with that relationship.
Yeah, it becomes pulling on a string, right? Hey, can we get them next month? And if you don't materialize, they don't materialize, they ask again. And then they start asking more questions, not even related to the financials. You then start a doubt, and where there's doubt is where they're going to pick.
Yep. Yeah, and when you think about succession plan, when you think about this journey that we're all on as entrepreneurs, as business owners, across any vertical in the industry, starting there is a little bit easier. Starting to make that decision to change today. Here we are, beginning of the year. Let's do something different. But it also, you know, one of the questions you and I talk about, when do you start this process? When do you want to think about it? And I was unique. I was 24, 25 when I started my firm, and I started with the end in mind. And I think as entrepreneurs, I always ask the question, what do you want to do when you grow up? Whether you're 25 or 55 or 75, I'm going to ask you the question. I love the question because it's fun to see people's journey. And I know, you know, not only am I asking that question, I know you are as well. I know that potential partner is saying, okay, what is this? Is this just a check for you, or is this something more? Are you trying to build something here to follow your passion?
Yeah, we tell folks, start with the end in mind for sure. And the way we phrase it is, build a business that's built to sell, irrespective of whether or not you ever sell it. Yeah. And there are fundamental truths in how you build a business that is built to sell. Yeah. And so many times, unfortunately, a handful of groups will come to us each and every year, and they have inadvertently baked poison pills inside of their business that are going to stand in the way of a seamless transaction.
Yeah.
You see it in partnership arrangements. You see it in sometimes how folks have structured their leases or this, that, and the other. Like, and they're just there, and we got to tackle them before you get to market.
And that's where you start with that conversation a little bit ago of saying, look, having everybody at the table, having your insurance, having your banker, having your advisors, having your even your real estate person every so often, like, here, these agreements good, or the real estate attorney that's going to look at this and say, is this assignable? You know, I've bought businesses, and I'll tell you, Kevin, one of the ones that's so unique I could never get assigned to me was the water cooler, the $42 a month water cooler. Thankfully, it was so immaterial, it didn't matter. But for 7 years, that was in the name of the old owner.
Yeah.
Couldn't get it assigned. It was the funniest thing. They signed some 10-year contract on this $42 a month water cooler. So, yeah, it's fun.
Well, Mike, I wanted to speak a little bit with you about the evolution of healthcare services. And we've seen some of these industries come into vogue with respect to consolidation by private equity over the years, and some catch fire and some kind of dwindle. Give us your unique perspective on what you've seen over the last decade and where you think we're going.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think COVID, you know, in the midst of all of this, you know, COVID had so many impacts on what private equity viewed as important and what didn't, right? Was you and I growing up in this industry, you know, vet had already been doing their thing, a little bit of ophthalmology, dental had started that groundwork, and you and I got in groundwork where DSO wasn't even the name. That was the ugly name, called it a management company or something other than what it was. And we've evolved in that sense. But, you know, as you look at where we are today, healthcare is always evolving, right? Med spa, metastatics, plastic surgery, doing this all day during COVID years, realizing, oh my gosh, I have something in my skin. It became so important, and these businesses have done so well. So there's so many of us from this dental vertical, veterinary vertical, like, oh, what's happening over here? And as we look at dental today, sitting 35, 40% consolidated somewhere along those lines, you know, a lot, right? A third. You know, you look at a med spa, plastic surgery, they're producing 1.5 million cash. There's not really insurance involved. Their profits are 20%. They did well through like COVID dramatic time.
Sure.
And people are willing to, you know, forego a car payment to really make sure they get their Botox. You know, and you're looking at an industry that maybe is 2% consolidated, maybe 3, and very few players. So there's a lot of excitement and energy as it relates to that. But what I'm also seeing, and, you know, something we're attacking is the offshoot verticals. You know, the behavioral health is coming back around. ASCs, they were huge when I got started, and starting to see more of those transactions. Radiology, veterinary, ophthalmology, optometry, a lot of these are still out there. Maybe it's not as big of a flurry as it was in some of these other verticals, but what's been unique, and you and I grew up in that conference scene, is I feel like dental has done it so well to bring everybody together, bring those like-minded. Med spa, metastatics, and plastic seem to be doing that same thing, which is creating this frenzy that I haven't seen in some of the other healthcare verticals we serve. That's been an interesting thing. A lot of folks, and of course, as we talk, you know, valuations, a lot of folks kind of a wait and see, but man, 24 has kicked off incredibly strong for the industry.
You brought up a couple things there I want to go back to. One is collaboration and education, right? So one of the things that most, when I was an investment banker, there wasn't a lot of collaboration, right? It was a sharp elbowed world. This is mine, stay away from it, I'm keeping. And what I've so loved about this healthcare services space and dental, metastatics, behavioral health, women's, like what I see is like-minded individuals like you and I come together and go, listen, let us show you what happened in these other industries that are a lot further along than you are.
Yep.
Let us bring our wisdom to you so that you don't make the same mistakes. And hopefully, just hopefully, the entrepreneurs that are running these businesses will collaborate together with one another. And, yeah. And I think that that's really just coming from a position of abundance and saying, listen, there's enough business out there for all of us. Let's just do things the right way, as opposed to this fear-based, the sky's falling. When is the market going to dry up? There's a lot of that noise out there in the market. Yes. And it's refreshing to talk with you from this position.
Well, look at the life cycle of our physician brethren before us, right? Before dental, before everything. How many times have we heard the physician life cycle into a hospital system? Bought by the hospitals, did it for 3 to 5 years, got out, did their practice again, bought by the hospitals, or aligned with the hospitals. There was a lot of that. We had a bunch of groups were like, all right, well, I'm not bought by the hospital, but I have their practice. And you see this over and over. Every day there's another physician practice, another GP, another dental, another vet practice opening its doors for the first time.
Right.
It's so exciting to see that. But here we are, this inflection point in generation. The boomers are retiring. They are looking for a succession plan. What this asset they have, this dental practice, this GP practice, but traded for 62 to 82% of trailing 12 collections or 2 to 3 times EBITDA is now 5 or 6 or 4.5, 7. You know, there's these ranges like, wow, that's really attractive. I could sell to my associate, but he's got 600,000 student loans right now. And I just don't know how he's going to be able to afford to get that loan. And that's this interesting time of this boomer generation retiring, associate doctors, the programs not graduating as many, and those that they are coming out with this huge amount of debt load. And it's going to create this, you know, frenzy of private equity and people coming in to say, well, let us help support you. Let us align across multiple specialties and create this cross-service basis. And I think it's going to be an interesting time.
Yeah, when folks call us, med spa owners call us, hey, I'm curious what my business is worth. And it's kind of a loaded question. Right? We can't just tell you if you've got $500,000 million of EBITDA. There's no answer. It's always, it depends.
Yeah.
But the next question I ask is to who? Who are you thinking about selling this to? Because if you're thinking about selling it to your incredible objector who you love and is the lifeblood of your business, I have a reasonable answer for you. It's worth what the bank will lend her is typically going to be the answer there.
Mm-hmm.
Alternatively, there are great private equity bankers. Groups and private equity companies that don't have that artificial ceiling on valuation because they have pools of liquidity that individuals do not have access to. And they view your business differently than the injector that has expressed interest.
Yep.
They're looking at it as a cash flow in perpetuity on which they can add additional businesses to and extract a higher value from the market from a deep-pocketed buyer. Yeah. So it is, I've always said, like, it is the most exciting time to own a healthcare service business because of the options that it gives you.
And I think some people believe that just because they partner with an equity group or a family office or an institution, they don't believe they're taking care of their associate, their partner, their juniors. And a lot of these have been prone or come up with a solution like, hey, we're going to create this limited partner pool, or we're going to create this ownership path for that individual because we want them to be here for the long term. We want them to feel a part of that transaction. So, you know, as you start going through that process and those old stigmas, I would say, saying, no, you can't do that, you know, whatever it may be, you know, we just have to kind of explore, like, well, maybe you can't with that group, but there's 100 other groups that are more open to that conversation. And just, you know, having those conversations, you know, you meet a new friend, if nothing else.
I could talk with you about the opportunities out there all day, but I want to get a little tactical, right? I want to get a little deep here in a little bit of the nuts and bolts without scaring folks away. We are going to talk a little bit of accounting. I'm sorry, but I think it's critical that people hear this.
Yeah.
Because I think all too often you're at the bar at AmSpot and you hear from your friend that they sold for 8 times or 9 times their EBITDA. And you could perceive that as, man, that's awesome. All I got to do is sign this contract and move on. But there's a lot of steps in that process to get there. There's the siding on with the M&A advisor, the diligence they're going to do that Tusk would do in this case. There's going to market and meeting all the buyers you could potentially partner with, both strategic buyers, meaning existing platforms that are private equity backed, or new private equity companies. And there's a boatload of them that want to get inside of this industry. Executing the letter of intent and then beginning diligence. And that's really where I want to start with you, Mike, is hear quality of earnings, Q of E. I'd really love for you to explain what that is like, and what it is for the client journey working with CLA and going through.
Yeah, I love it. And you're right. We could probably spend the rest of the afternoon having awesome conversations like, what is EBITDA and that multiple of EBITDA? And what does that
mean? Another form for that, for sure.
What is so funny, and the antidote is the seller thought they got a 9, the buyer thinks they bought it at a 7.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, everybody's happy, right? And that's ultimately, that's where you come in, is making sure that this value is maximized. But, you know, relative to where we come in a little, I don't say earlier in the process, but early in your process is, hey, we have this deal, we've done our internal analysis, you know, your team, Alex, and all the guys have said, yep, this is what we believe it is, and here's where things are we need to dig into. And that's where we come in from a quality of earnings. And we say, and we do, you know, 50-50, buy side, sell side. So we are getting in there and saying, okay, if we don't have enough time to clean up your books, then let us put together a deck, dig into those areas, and make sure they tick and tie out. Yep. This isn't an audit. And I know some people really think of it as, oh, you're auditing. Well, there's really big areas we're testing, meaning we're going to do a cash proof. Does your collections for your practice management system tie to QuickBooks, tie to your bank account? Does that make sense? Are these normalized add backs adjustments? Hey, I run my car through, I run my golf club through, all this. We need to go see that you're actually running those expenses through. But where is that transaction? How is it happening? And more importantly, did you really move it out of the business?
Hey, you know, quick PSA. Yeah. Yeah. I don't work for the IRS, and Mike does not work for the IRS. And we believe in the power of business ownership. And you do what you want to with your expenses and your. I had to make that.
Yeah, and it's not getting reported to anybody but yourself and the investor. That is absolutely, and I've had that question. I know you have too. So it's a great point. You know, our goal, so let's say we're on the sell side. Our goal is to maximize the value and get aggressive on those add backs, adjustments, normalization. You know, where you and I get in early, and I love the work, is, man, I think we can move the needle on this business during the cycle and start introducing some of our friends, our partners, our industry, you know, alliances, that say, hey, I think you can go improve your supply bill, or I think this person maybe not performing up to their standard, and we're helping them along the way. And that's such a great thing. But our goal of sell side is to throw get a big EBITDA out there, throw some additional adjustments, and make the buyer come back and prove it. Now, on the buy side, our goal is to beat that number down.
Oh, wait, and, there's more?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and that's the fun part. And I know you've been in the room when these conversations happen. Well, Mike, your QE's wrong. No, no. I was on a different side of the table. My goal is to beat that number down. And that's what the other firm's goal is to do for ours. And it's such a good negotiation and conversation. And that's where you take those numbers and you and your team step in and say, all right, let's battle this out.
Yeah, this is so important because you'll ink a letter of intent, and it let's say it's an 8x deal on $1 million of EBITDA. And if you look at that, if you read it clearly, there's a little fine print there that says subject to the quality of earnings, right? And that's when the quality of earnings comes in. And if you're engaged, Mike, on the buy side, you're looking to find ways that maybe the buyer could view that million as 800. Right. And if we're on the sell side, that million could look more like $1.2 million.
Right.
And so is there science involved in calculating the EBITDA all day long? There's absolutely pure accounting principles that you use to derive the number. And then there's the artistry with which you apply kind of some pro forma changes, some add backs. And both sides know how to play the game.
Yeah. Well, yeah, think, oh, I lost an associate for 3 months. That lost production and a ramp up of the new one. We will go in there and calculate, okay, you had this production trend and number of patients seen and all that before this doctor left. You have this after that doctor left. So, yeah, we can justify a stop gap of this much revenue loss. You subtract out the doctor comp, and we have a really good add back adjustment that we can have that conversation. The other one is, I'm in the middle of opening my fourth location. Is now really the time? Well, let's see how you did in opening your last three. And that tells such a great story from your seat of saying, this person has a proven record of opening three de novos. We're doing three acquisitions. They have a model. And this is how they're going to do here. Let's do a pro forma on this one and at least capture our cost back into it, or put an escrow fund out there to say, if it performs as I say it's going to, then I have an ability to run extra, right? Those are the things that quality earnings we get asked to do, and you of course have to battle out before.
Yeah, I'm sure you meet these folks too. We meet people who say, I did my own deal. I'm so happy. Yeah. I got 10 times my EBITDA. And then the question is, who calculated your EBITDA? Right? I mean, I've written a couple articles on this, like, Mike, I'll pay you 25 times your EBITDA if you let me calculate your EBITDA.
Give me the number, yeah.
You can tell everybody you made 25 times. Man, it's so good to see you. There's so much more to cover. I know we'll have you back, but I'm sure everybody who's had the pleasure of listening to this is going, okay, my head's spinning a little bit. I'm starting to feel like I need to level up. I need to find a strategic partner and an accountant who can help me build a solid foundation, and then also ensure that I have it built for scale in preparation for what I'm about to do. And then when I do transact, has my back all along the way.
Yep.
So for folks that are having that question, how can they get in touch with you today?
It's a great question. I appreciate that. You know, we have a wonderful team of industry. You know, we really lean into industry specialization. So, you know, if somebody comes in here with a med spa or plastic conversation, I have a team that knows that industry really well and the things that we should look at. So getting a hold of me, mike.white@claconnect.com, you know, long email, and we'll definitely exchange along the way. Very hard to miss it in your normal conferences at 6'8". But, you know, we'll get the information. Our goal is, we always do a courtesy assessment. We want to get to know you. The CPA relationship, we started the call this way, should be your most trusted relationship. And we have to build that trust. And we're, you know, that's what our goal is to do. And have those conversations, really dig in. And whether we're the right person or not, we're going to give you some nice, sound advice.
It's awesome. Thanks, Mike. It's always good to see you. Thanks for all your time. I'll see you out there on the road.
I love it. Have a great day, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Sounds good. See you, man. Bye. Mike was great. He always is. He's like a lot of our guests. He's seen this for decades. What I love from that conversation is really two big takeaways. One is reporting can impact valuation, right? So if you're not able to get your report, your accounting back, your income statements back with great regularity and ease within 30 days of the close of the month, you're not getting the numbers you need to drive your business. That's the immediate impact. The long-term impact is when you go through a process to sell, it's a bad look. And buyers are going to see risks, and that's going to manifest itself in a lower market. So look, guys, it's never, ever, ever too early to start working on this. And we work with Mike with great regularity. And what I love about working with Mike is we do valuation work for almost everybody that we send their way. So they can immediately know what their business is worth in today's environment. Because if you don't know that, I mean, you may have a vision, you may know where you want to go, but it's hard to get there if you don't know where you're starting from. So here at Tusk, we work with entrepreneurs across all healthcare services to provide them complimentary valuations so they know exactly where they stand today. So when you're working with Mike and plotting your pathway to where you want to go, he and I, our team and his team, are on the same page. Great conversation. Who knew a CPA could be so entertaining? Always great to have friends on the pod. Y'all take care. Thanks.